Muddy Knees Media.
Totally Football Show European Edition. Among today's hot stories, Erling Haaland, Erling doors with an incredible debut for Borussia Dortmund. Elsewhere, when teammates plot murder, Alan Pardew Ghostbuster, and Go Lazio as the Biancoceleste win their 11th straight. All that and more in this Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Hello, everybody. With all the hot noticias, the grand nouvelles, the grosse neuigkeiten from the continent, it is...
What about in Italian? No.
Well, that's kind of in there with the Spanish. Notizie, noticias. They're all about the same. Mm. Yeah, hello, Julien Laurent.
Bonjour, James.
Hello, James Horncastle.
Hello.
Hello, Alvaro Romeo.
Hello, hello.
And Raphael Honigstein, hello to you.
Hello to you, too.
Wow, you've got a lot to tell us about today, haven't you, Raph?
Absolutely.
Bumper Bundesliga edition.
Back, baby.
Let's do our quick round of headlines, just so we know what's in store. Alvaro, top Spanish stories?
Yeah, and it's got to be all about Quique Setién's Barcelona, because they managed to get a victory in the first game of this manager in charge. And then Real Madrid is still topping the table altogether with Barcelona in what it seems to be a two-horse race after Atletico de Madrid lost at Eibar.
They lost at Eibar, didn't they? James Horncastle.
Lazio keep winning, James. La Repubblica this morning describing them like the T-Rex in Jurassic Park coming out of the jungle, but you can just see the kind of ripples in your kind of, you know, sort of glass of water on your dashboard.
Is Conte the man sat on the toilet?
Well, if they win their game in hand, Lazio, they will leapfrog Inter, ooh, I suppose. Immobile has scored more than seven other Serie A teams.
Right. Also, total collapse in Naples.
Collapse in Naples, right. With Napoli this time not mutinying when being told that they're going into detention because they are, have been sent into Retiro again.
Yeah, but then they left the next day. But we'll hear about all of that down the road because Napoli are facing Lazio on Tuesday. Julien, French news, please.
Only two words. Ryan Cherki, 16-year-old,
the new star.
I know, but then I felt like I had to insist. Explain.
No, you do, because this is an extraordinary story. Yeah. Well, you think Haaland's an amazingly precocious footballer. Tell us, well, you will be telling us all about Ryan
Cherki.
Nice. And Bundesliga, Raf.
Heir to the throne, James.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, Erling Haaland coming on.
Erling warning.
Yeah, absolutely. Rome. 56 great. Minutes gone, Dortmund 3-1 down. Excuse me, I'm doing a pod here.
Which one?
We're still used to coming from Horncastle.
That's rich. That's rich.
That is bold.
Anyway, all right. So you'll be telling us all about the incredible Erling Haaland, who made yet another of his incredible debuts, and loads more besides, I'll warrant.
Yes.
Good. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what, not long to wait for all of that goodness, because right after this, Rafa goes Bundesliga.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
Aufregen. Zweiten Halbzeit über die rechte Seite jetzt. Haaland, der geht wieder aufs Tor zu. Haaland, ihr Tor, der macht das dritte. Ich drehe durch. Haaland macht das 5-3. Er legt Augsburg alleine. Sensationell.
Yep, a sensational return for the Bundesliga, Rafa, from their recent jaunt to Spain. Loads of big teams winning, but the biggest victory of all arguably belonged to Dortmund?
Well, certainly the biggest impact, I think, as far as Erling Haaland's substitution is concerned. Before the game, Michael Zorc had warned about expectations not being too high, that the player needed to be eased in, that he'd need some time to adapt, and so on and so on. But of course, within 23 minutes of coming on, he had helped turn a 3-1 deficit into a 5-3 victory. Sancho also with an assist and a goal in among that hat-trick. And it's not just a win. It's also, I think, the difference between full-blown crisis mode at Dortmund, with everyone saying, how can you defend like this? You're out of the title race. Favre needs to go, to this wonderful, we have Haaland, he might get us the title dynamic. So it couldn't have been bigger, both in terms of sentiment and momentum, as well as the result.
Right. He's a guy who probably not many people had any awareness of before this season, but had been the revelation of the Champions League group stages, where he scored with his first three shots on target for Red Bull Salzburg. Gets bought by Dortmund. What a sensational start. But you call it a hat trick. Not all Germans would agree.
Yeah, I mean, there is this strange obsession with hat tricks having to be pure and proper. And a pure and proper hat trick is something that needs to be done in one half and without interruption. So strictly speaking, for some very officious German observers, this is not a proper hat trick.
Wow. Do they do like right foot, left foot header as well to be perfect?
No, they don't.
Without the interruption thing, what does it mean?
And no one else can score while you are scoring your three goals.
Whereas,
and
as you mentioned, Jadon Sancho with a brilliant ball over the top, superbly controlled. In fact, the other goals in this game were pretty special as well. Sancho's, who has become the first player across Europe's top five leagues to reach double figures for goals and assists this season. But also Marco Richter, his goal for Augsburg.
This goal is amazing.
Richter scale.
Off the Richter scale. Brilliant. It was a wonderful goal. I mean, Augsburg were pretty good. Dortmund were pretty atrocious at the back. But of course, we know that they can score goals. And now, with Haaland there, I think they'll be much more effective. They had so many chances in the first half, which Royce missed most of them. And it makes all the difference if you suddenly have this guy making the right runs, being in the box, being able to take the finishes as well as he did. I mean, of course, the second one was a tap-in, but the other two were absolutely brilliant. One from a tight angle with his right foot, one from a slightly more central angle with his left foot. And the guy just comes on and just kind of shrugs off opponents and scores. So, unbelievable.
First Dortmund player to score a hat-trick on his debut since?
Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang.
Which, curiously enough, was also against Augsburg.
Yeah, at home in 2013.
It's five hat-tricks for the season. For Haaland. Mm. And that's not including the nine that he scored in the summer for Norway in that 12-0 win against Honduras at the Under-20 World Cup.
Since, incredible.
Since 2000, only six players have scored a hat-trick on their debut in the top five leagues. Aubameyang and Haaland being two of them. André Silva for Sevilla as well in 2018, and Pauleta for Bordeaux in 2001, I think.
Okay.
Then two other players that I've forgotten, but is that right? And no one has done it off the bench. So the impact off the bench as well for someone in their debut in a big league like that is pretty incredible.
It is. It is. Has Germany got Haaland fever now?
Dortmund has. Dortmund certainly has. I think it's going to be really hard to keep him on the wraps now. I think the original plan was not to have him speak in the mix zone, but that completely went out of the window when he was walking around with the match ball in his hand, being, of course, very happy, but also quite chilled. I mean, this is the sort of guy who just doesn't really lose his cool. Was just talking matter-of-factly of, you know, turning up, scoring goals, being happy to be there. And when they asked him, maybe it's enough for you to get a starting place. Maybe you are fit enough for the next game against Cologne. He just turned around to the interview and goes, how did it look like to you? That's pretty good.
Pretty good. Well, as I mentioned, plenty of big teams winning this weekend. For example, Bundesliga champions Bayern Munich, who took on their former manager Jürgen Klinsmann. How did that go for Jürgen?
Not so well. The preparations were slightly disrupted by the fact that he didn't have a valid license. You know, in Germany, you need to, most countries actually, you need to have a proper license. His had expired, as it turned out, because you need to renew your papers, you need to go to courses and stuff. And he'd also forgotten the physical document back in California. But he managed to rustle up just enough documents to satisfy the very strict requirements of the German FA. In a way,
so strict.
I know.
With
in a way, yeah.
With licenses.
It's almost as if they're very, very bureaucratic and stuff.
I didn't know that your badges expired. I didn't know that, it was, you know, once you had them, no? Like a bicycle.
You need to keep improving and keep learning. Wow. You never stop learning, James, in this business.
Boy, tell me about it.
But in a way, perhaps he shouldn't have bothered because Hertha turned up, tried to play an ultra-defensive, passive style, did enough to frustrate Bayern in the first half, but as soon as Thomas Müller, in sort of very typical Müller fashion, scuffs a shot in through the legs of the keeper on the half volley, Hertha just collapsed and Bayern ran out easy 4-0 winners. And once again, it was a little bit easy, but perhaps also understandable that a lot of people sort of poking fun about this big vision that Hertha have about becoming this powerhouse in German and international football. Jürgen Klinsmann was talking about winning the league within half a decade or so, and it didn't look like it on Sunday night.
Who's going to win the league this time around. RB Leipzig are looking pretty good. They were a goal down against Union Berlin, but helped by a second-half brace from Timo Werner, who's now got 9 goals in his last 7. They went on to claim the victory and stay 4 points clear of Bayern at the top of the Bundesliga. They have also become, Rafa, as you probably know, the first team in Bundesliga history to score at least 3 goals in 9 consecutive matches. That's extraordinary. 34 goals in their last 9 league games. I'd sure hate to be the team facing them in the Champions League in the next... Oh, Spurs, hello.
I mean, they're playing really, really well, but they're also scoring incredible goals. If you see Timo Werner's first goal, it's just an unbelievable finish. And in the words of Julian Nagelsmann, the coach, you know, he tries that 3 or 4 times, that probably goes out the stadium and keeps on flying. But the form and confidence he's in at the moment, he just hits it and scores a beautiful goal. And he's overtaken Lewandowski in the goal scoring ranks now with 20 goals. The guy is just on another level. And of course, it helps when you have a coach who believes in a very attacking style, but also helps players like him by having a lot of people around him. I mean, Leipzig, when they switched formation again in the second half, they played basically a 4-2-2-2. So they almost have like 4 strikers on the pitch who all play quite narrow next to each other. And Werner really benefits from that. So, yeah, it was hard not to be really impressed with them and the way they came back from that relatively poor start in the first half. They'll take some stopping this year, Leipzig.
4 points clear of Bayern. 5 points clear from Borussia Mönchengladbach, who lost to Schalke. And then you got Dortmund and Schalke, 7 points off the lead.
There's some solidarity, James, from Hertha Berlin fans with their Genoa brethren.
Oh, yeah.
There's banners, I think, at the Olympiastadion, which was said, non molare ultras Genoa, preziosi, vattene.
Right.
So don't give up, Genoa ultras.
Preziosi,
do one.
Do one.
Yeah. What's the background of this?
So the Genoa fans at this moment in time, well, not in this moment in time, but for many, many years now, have been protesting against the president. They want him out. They think he, you know, as we often see, and it's quite curious that they actually haven't sold anyone so far this January, but they usually sell their star player at this time of year. So
probably because they don't
Piontek,
really
Suso, yeah, they don't really have anyone at the moment.
Union Berlin's fans and Genoa fans, are they like sometimes ultras are linked in different countries? Is that where it comes from?
I imagine it is. Yeah. But I think that this has become, it's not like the Wenger out banner. You don't see Preziosi Vatine NBA games, but it's It could happen. It's catching fire.
By the way, if you're curious about the unique figure of Enrico Preziosi and what happened last time he tried to bring Genoa out of the... Well, in fact, the time before he tried to bring Genoa out of Serie B and what €250,000 in a briefcase had to do with it all, then you might like to listen to the Golazzo that we made all about that, which features a very calm and measured performance from Gabriele Marcotti.
Yeah, yeah.
As always.
That's a Golazzo deep cut, that is.
Ben McLannan says, who on the Spurs team will survive RB Leipzig and what will be left of them? That's quite dramatic.
Yeah, I don't think that Leipzig will destroy them, but I think they have a very good chance of beating them, especially if Spurs continue in their quite passive defensive way. Leipzig have been learning how to play against these sides. That's one of the big improvements under Julian Nagelsmann. Their possession game has really come on. And Spurs need to really attack because Leipzig still have one or two issues defensively. But if you leave them the ball, they will score.
All right. And also, it's not like Spurs have a history of collapsing at home to German sides in the Champions League that I can think of.
Recent history.
Yeah. Amongst other German-related news stories, this is very regrettable, St. Pauli getting included in UK counter-terrorism instructions to medical staff and teachers. Did you see this?
I did see this. I still find it very hard to believe.
Yeah.
I don't think the club have seen it. Or I haven't seen any comments by the club, but it is bizarre.
Right.
Their banner or their badge should be considered radical to the point of being under terrorist suspicion.
It's in there with Greenpeace and PETA, the anti-kind of fur, etc.
And Extinction Rebellion.
Extinction Rebellion. The wording on the document suggests that they've included a lot of different kinds of logos and symbols so that people know what they all mean. It doesn't say that they're all. In fact, there's a bit of writing that says, by the way, these are not all extremist
symbols, but it's a curious one.
Brand association.
I mean, knowing Sampaoli, they were probably on some level welcome this and think this is some kind of badge of honour to be included in that list.
Indeed. All right. Well, a busy weekend in the Bundesliga. Good to have it back, Rafa. Up next, let's talk some Spain.
Everyone remembers that time you've had that peach of an accumulator looking good only for, oh, and the keeper's let it slip through his legs in the 94th minute. Or the right back has to pull on the gloves and face a penalty. Or Man United have again conceded a late equaliser. But with Paddy Power's Acca Cracker, you get a free bet if one leg of your fourfold plus Acca lets you down on all football matches and all markets. Paddy Power. Max free bet £10. Minimum odds of 1-5 on each leg. Online exclusive. Exclude shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
Ahí está Sergio, Sergio para Leo, Leo para Griezmann, para Arturo Vidal, Vitecón para Leo, 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 gol, Leo, gol, Leo, gol, Leo, gol, Leo, 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 tenía que llegar y llegó.
Yep, that's the sound of the cows missing Quique Setién this weekend because he wasn't there to walk amongst them. Instead, he was off at the Camp Nou, which rhymes with cow. Yeah, which rhymes with cow. And watching his Barcelona side, Alvaro, get off the mark with a, what was it, slightly laboured 1-0, or was it a tremendously Barcelona-esque passing display against Granada?
It was a dominative display of Barcelona. But they were lacking the edge. And normally the Quique Setién clubs are associated to that. Quique Setién is a person who normally, it's been even mocked in Spain because he talks about Cruyff all the time, he talks about possession all the time, and managers like Simeone or Getafe manager Bordalás, they don't like that approach and they don't like when Quique Setién wants to lecture them. And this was what you would expect from the Quique Setién caricature game. It was Barcelona winning 1-0, but it was for them very difficult to find the chances. But he tried to implement some tactical changes, even though he only trained with the team a couple of days last week. To start with, he implemented again the double sessions, so training in the morning and in the afternoon as well. That is something that Valverde wasn't doing. Probably this is because Quique Setién needed to have quality time with the players. And Barcelona played in attack with a 3-5-2 formation, which is something unusual, with Sergi Roberto playing as a centre-back when Barcelona had the ball. Ansu Fati and Antoine Griezmann playing, especially Ansu Fati, playing quite wide on the right, Jordi Alba wide on the left, and Griezmann and Messi moving up front, linking up. So it was a new formation. Barcelona tried to press higher and stronger when Granada had the ball, and it worked more or less all right in Quique Setién terms. Barcelona had the highest possession of the ball since 2011.
How much?
82.6% possession. It's I know, it's absolutely crazy. But they still, they only managed to score one goal, and it was a goal of Messi, which, by the way, it was very nice because it was like a pass to the goal net with the right foot. Some other player would smash the ball into the net, and Lionel Messi did it in a very subtle way.
A lovely assist from Vidal as well.
Absolutely, yeah. And Arturo Vidal was one of those players that you would think that a person like Quique Setién would deploy and probably put on the bench and not even think about him. But the truth is that he was crucial in that goal and he played a good game. And then another player that we talked about in the past, Ricky Puig.
Ricky Puig.
Yeah, the guy from the academy, the guy that everyone was expecting to play this season. He's been expected more than a Messi in Barcelona, especially since the departure of Xavi and Iniesta. He seems to be this type of player. And he was crucial as well in Barcelona's goal because he was the one stealing the ball, first of all, and then doing the pre-assist to the assist of Arturo Vidal. So it was an all right evening for Barcelona. They are still top of the table and they won in an unconvincing display, even though Quique Setién gave himself like an 8 out of 10 mark after the game, yeah.
Oh, that's nice. Okay, well, they stay level with Real Madrid ahead on goal difference, though. Real Madrid seeing off their former manager, Julen Lopetegui, in a 2-1 victory. A brace from Casemiro. I didn't realise he used to be a striker, Casemiro.
At the beginning, yeah. Never for Real Madrid, not even in Real Madrid Academy, Real Madrid Castilla. But when he played in Brazil, he was playing, I don't know if up front as a number nine, but definitely close to the opponent's box. And De Jong scored the goal in the first half.
Luke De Jong,
yeah. Mm. Who, by the way, played for Newcastle. And yeah. I believe that he was a tremendous disappointment in there. But then he came back to PSV. And last season he scored 32 goals for them. So Sevilla signed this player who is turning 29 or 30 this year. And he was the first one scoring a goal against Real Madrid in the first half at Santiago Bernabeu. And after the VAR check, the goal was disallowed because there was a block in the corner kick by Gudelj to Eder Militao. Eder Militao, Real Madrid centre-back, was marking Luke de Jong, who had the ball totally unmarked. The referee called off the goal, and Monchi, the Real Madrid sporting director, said after the game that if Luke de Jong's second goal in the game, the only one that stood, had been disallowed for a handball on Munir, which, by the way, was a handball, he would have gone down to the pitch and told his players to leave.
Right.
Yeah, Monchi, the sporting director, said that.
Right, okay.
Yeah, which is a very populist rant, probably, and terribly exaggerated as well, because I think that the Luke de Jong first goal disallowed was probably very interpretative, but still, according to the rules, it was well disallowed, and the second goal of de Jong shouldn't have counted because there was a hand of Munir in the build-up to the goal. All that said, Real Madrid won, again, with no Eden Hazard, with right. no Karim Benzema, mm-hmm. no Sergio Ramos, and Zinedine Zidane's plan is working very well. I mean, they haven't lost a game since losing against Mallorca.
Not only that, but as Sam points out, they've conceded, Real Madrid, the least amount of goals, or the fewest goals, in Europe's top five leagues. Sam says, I find that really surprising for some reason. Should I? Ask Sam, and how have they managed that?
It's a number of things, obviously, but the centre-backs are playing really well. Mm. Then I believe that after losing against Mallorca, Zinedine Zidane went back to some basics and Real Madrid got the solidity back. And they don't attack in any sort of crazy manner. Okay. Normally they've got a very, very well-structured attack.
Brilliant, okay.
Courtois as well.
Oh, yeah.
Courtois had the best season for sure. One of the best in his career, and certainly the best one since coming back.
You're absolutely right. And before, in autumn time, there was this comment among Real Madrid fans that Thibaut Courtois was an all right goalkeeper, but he hadn't been miraculous for Real Madrid, like Iker Casillas was at the time when he was at his prime, like Keylor Navas had been sometimes. Thibaut Courtois didn't seem to do any more than the correct thing, but he wasn't capable of producing something spectacular. Well, ever since late November, I would say, he's been phenomenal. Probably the best goalkeeper in the league.
Okay, so that's Real Madrid's defensive successes. Why is it that the other Madrid side, who were famed for their defensive rigor, have all of a sudden started to wobble all over the place, losing, what was it, 2-1, 2-0 against Eibar?
2-0 against Eibar, yeah. It's not easy to play there at Ipurua. Weather conditions are very British in there, in the north of Spain. It was windy, it was damp and miserable. And Atletico de Madrid didn't show the intensity that is supposed to be their trademark quality. And in fact, it's been a couple of players during the season that they have flagged that they are not being intense enough, one of them being Saúl a couple of months ago. I tell you what, I think that if you tell Atletico de Madrid something like this, what is easier for you? Beating Liverpool in the Champions League in two legs or beating Eibar 3-0 at home, they wouldn't know what to answer because they've got a tremendous problem to score goals and yet they are very competitive when it comes to small scoreline games. So, for example, the tie against Liverpool, even though I believe that Liverpool is overwhelmingly favourite, I'm sure that Atletico will have at least the right plan to stop Liverpool.
Okay.
But they don't have the right plan to produce heavy wins. And it's worth mentioning that João Félix is always the player who comes off the pitch. And I think that the Portuguese youngster is not playing with the naturality he should.
He's getting hooked a lot, is he?
A lot. Simeone is always changing the guy. I mean, after the hour mark, normally you look at João Félix because you know that the player is not going to play much more.
Right.
And against Eibar, he played only 83 minutes. It was all right. But if you pay 120 million euro for a player, he's expected to be on the pitch all the time because he's your differential player.
Right.
And he's not making the difference, in all fairness, but at the same time, he's not getting the right confidence from the manager.
I see. Currently, Atletico Madrid lying third, 8 points behind the leading pair and only 2 points off fifth place and missing out on the Champions League. In other news, Former Spain international Raul Bravo may have been arrested for the attempted murder of Real Sociedad legend Darko Kovacevic. What? Sorry? What on earth is going on here, Alvaro?
This is so weird. I know. Well, let's start from the beginning. It's a Serbian journal.
Yep. Telegraph.
Exactly. The one.
So Darko Kovacevic, who was briefly, of course, we all recall, at Sheffield Wednesday back in 1996, but also featured a lot for Real Sociedad and Juventus, and Lazio a bit.
He almost won a league with Real Sociedad.
Okay.
That was his importance for that team. He was great.
He was in the World Cup for Serbia and Montenegro as well. And he also played for Olympiacos, where he was teammates with Raul Bravo, Real Madrid legend, Spain Euro 2004.
Leeds legend as well, with Rocky Jr.
There you go.
Real Madrid legend, perhaps, is too generous.
Yeah. Real Madrid former player. Okay, right. Anyway, so they're there at Olympiacos. But anyway, Darko Kovacevic, on the 7th of January of this year, coming out of his house when a man in a hat gets out of a car and opens fire on him. And he falls to the ground, and the man runs off. Or it might have been two men, reports are confused. And police later find a car and a pistol about 700 metres from Kovacevic's house. And then the next thing is that Raul Bravo gets arrested. Is this right?
Yeah, and he's been previously arrested on suspicion of corruption and match fixing in Spain. This is not proven yet, but the Spanish police called this operation Oikos. Oikos is a yogurt brand.
Ah,
and
nice.
It's a Greek word because Raul Bravo played in Greece.
Right.
And yeah.
So you think that the name of the operation suggests that they...
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit of a key name. Yes, yeah. But Raul Bravo has been in the middle of plenty of controversies in Spain. For example, there has been allegations and he was even arrested preventively because he was in the middle of a match-fixing scandal in La Liga and corruption. And that happened in last May 2019. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to this case, Raul Bravo gave an interview to Marca newspaper, denying obviously that he has anything to do with the Darko Kovacevic murder attempt. He also said that they are very good mates, still Darko Kovacevic and him, and that it's just the Serbian press who is making this up. If you are so sure that you are innocent, normally you sue this newspaper, right? And he said that he won't do that. I don't know if he doesn't do that because he doesn't want to, you know, to stir a little bit that melting pot and being found guilty of something. But yes, he's been a very dodgy character since he left football, Raul Bravo.
Well, an extraordinary story. Will Raul Bravo clear his name? And let's hope Darko Kovacevic is going to be okay. More on that when we know more. Something lighter to finish off with, perhaps, Alvaro?
Yeah, something awful, really, because after the Eibar Atletico de Madrid game, some Atletico fans were spotted doing the Nazi salute, Nazi gesture to the cameras on their way back from Ipurua, Eibar Stadium. So, yes, this is not the first time that Atletico de Madrid supporters do something like that. In fact, in 2014, I remember that there was a massive, massive fight between Atletico de Madrid Ultras and Deportivo de la Coruña Ultras in Madrid, next to the Manzanares, the river. And a Deportivo de la Coruña Ultra passed away. He fell in the river. Yeah, you remember all that, right? Well, some say that this could be like a turning point for Atletico de Madrid to stop this ultra culture and stop the ultras from attending the games and all that. Nothing has been made since then. And this is not the first time that Atletico de Madrid do something like this. And I don't know if this is very interesting, but the far right in the Spanish parliament is the third force now. In 2014, they didn't have any representation. So if you have a far right as well in the parliament giving some awful messages that affect society, education, even economy and how to treat immigrants and all that, I'm not saying that the Atletico de Madrid ultras are just derivative from them. It's clearly there. The far right is creating like a positive melting pot in which these messages are absolutely acceptable.
Sadly, I think I know what you're talking about there. Alvaro, thank you very much. After this, let's head off to Serie A.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
Perché Ciro Immobile può segnare una tripletta e portarsi il pallone a casa. Porta alla nostra destra, sotto la sud, parte Immobile, il tiro rete! E siamo 5-0. Tripletta di Ciro Immobile, 23 gol segnati in campionato, davvero.
Italy! Ooh, loads to discuss here, James. Juve 4 points clear. Mm-hmm. Ranieri having his players over for dinner, but not like that. Napoli collapsing. But in the week leading up to the Rome derby, we have to start with Lazio.
Yeah, we do indeed, because they were 3-0 up after 20 minutes against Samp. A Samp side that had stabilised under Claudio Ranieri. We talked about that last week. They were bottom when he took over. They were 5 points clear of the relegation zone going into the winter break. And one of the reasons for that was because they'd kept, I think only Real Madrid and another team in Europe's top five leagues had kept more clean sheets than
really?
Samp.
Really?
And all of a sudden, this Lazio side...
Was that because they were on a winter break?
But they ripped through them. And Immobile got his first hat-trick of the season. He's now on 23 goals in 19 games. It's the best record that any Serie A striker's had since Angelino back in the late 60s. Looks on course to break Higuain's single-season record, which he set in his final season at Napoli. And there is just this genuine feeling that they are, at the moment, the team that maybe doesn't have as much talent as Juventus, as Inter, but they are playing the best football. They are making games look easier than Juventus and Inter are at the moment. And should be taken seriously. It's a big week for them with Napoli in the cup and then Roma. And I think, yeah, you could make this case for Lazio that they, in some respects, deserve to have more points than they already do. Because they've got this game in hand, which is against a good Verona side, but also B, because they hit the woodwork four times in the last derby against Roma. They deserve to win that one. For Immobile to have scored more goals than seven other teams in Serie A...
On his own. It's extraordinary, isn't it? Because he's
pretty remarkable.
He's a challenging player in some ways, challenging on the eye. He doesn't have the natural grace of some of the other strikers who light up the scoring races around Europe. He's a dogged footballer.
Yeah, and the other thing that was pointed out at the weekend is that he scores a lot of penalties. Nine of his goals this season have
come... Two of this hat trick were
yeah, the they've come from the spot. He's had one saved from Szczesny, but he's also been a great kind of teammate in that he's given some of his other Lazio mates a go as well. Luis Alberto had one and scored it. Joaquin Correa had one, missed it. And Caicedo had one. I think either scored or saw it saved. So he could have had more opportunities from the spot. He could even be even further ahead of Lukaku and Cristiano Ronaldo at the top of the scoring charts.
Incredible. What about Lazio then, James? They're 2 points behind Inter in second and six behind Juve, but they have a game in hand. Could they do it?
I think they have to be taken seriously. They're not in Europe. They can focus on this. I think in contrast to other years, Luis Alberto and Sergei Milinkovic-Savic are kind of content with where they are at the moment. They haven't had their heads turned by moves or failed moves elsewhere. And also, they've got a depth which I think they haven't had in the past. Last year felt like a bit of a transition year, moving on from De Vrij, who went to Inter, and also Felipe Anderson, who went to West Ham. Anderson wasn't a big part of that team, but he was the 12th man. He would come off the bench and change games. Now they've got Lazzari on that side, who's one of the quickest players in Serie A. And they've got that right mix, I think, between youth and experience. And when you've got someone like Caicedo, who's quite happy to be the guy who comes on off the bench, knows his role and is contributing, scored 5 goals so far this season, some late winners as well. You've got Johnny, who they signed in the summer, who's whipping in crosses, coming on and making a decisive impact. They're all making their contribution to this team being very formidable. And I think the other thing, we've talked about how many goals they're scoring, goals. They've got the second best defence in the league as well. Mm. They're backing it up at both ends. I mean, it's going to be fascinating, the Rome derby, because no one would like to end this streak more than the Giallorossi. And it'll be interesting to see again how far they've come since the derby in, early on in the season, because they certainly have come on leaps and bounds. They were very good again at the weekend, but this Lazio side was too much for them, and they were lucky to get a point against them last time out in September.
What about Claudio Ranieri's reaction to that 5-1 drubbing?
Entirely justified. He said he was going to put a bit of oil on his players, sprinkle them with some salt, some pepper, and then eat them alive.
I can't see Claudio Ranieri carrying that comment off.
He did it very well.
Did he?
Yeah, it was very...
Put some opera music on.
Yeah.
Open a nice Chianti, some fava beans.
Yeah. Right. Just maybe different if he had Kevin Lasagna in his side. That would
Or Gamberini. Or, you know, something like that. But
Tagli la tela.
They just keep coming.
Tuesday in the cup, though, it is Napoli. Napoli were in all sorts of trouble, but then thankfully got rid of their manager, Carlo Ancelotti. So
results have really picked up, James.
Really picked up. 4 defeats in 5 for Gennaro Gattuso. So can you explain? So this weekend, they lose to Fiorentina, who move above them in the table. Napoli now in the bottom half of the Classifica. Their players then elected to go into Ritiro, but then the next day changed their mind. What happened exactly?
Changed their mind and just went home.
Just went home.
Yeah, this is the thing. It'd be really funny if the manager mutinied this time.
Right.
Because ultimately, we were referencing what happened after the Salzburg game when... the players were due to go into this Ritiro and decide that they weren't going to do it. They were going to contravene the orders of the club. Carlo Ancelotti said he was going to stand by it. And that was really the kind of breakdown which precipitated the end of Carlo at Napoli. Unfortunately for Rino Gattuso, they'd actually played well in some of their recent losses. You think of that defeat late to Lazio. Only happened in the final 10 minutes. And it's Ospina, Howler, with Giovanni Di Lorenzo then whacking it into his own net rather than clearing it. You think of the goals they gifted Inter as well. I think it's a team that is very low on confidence, and I think it's a team that is aware that it's at the end of a cycle, is aware that the end of the season can't come soon enough, because I think some of those players feel that it's time to move on. And I feel quite some sympathy for Gattuso in these circumstances, because you inherit what is on paper a very talented side, which has achieved a lot over the last 5 or 6 years, but whether you can get that talent to apply itself at this moment in time, when I think so many players look at the action that the club took after the mutiny, well, A, imposing that Ritiro on them anyway, which they disagreed with, and B, then the fines that came.
Well, things beginning to unravel, certainly in results terms. Dash asking, where is the nadir for Napoli? They're basically still in free fall with no real end in sight. How long will Gattuso last in the current climate? How bad can it get?
Well, look, they've backed him in the transfer market. They've signed two players. We mentioned Diego Demme, who made his debut coming on for Allen at the weekend. We still haven't really seen Stanislav Slobotka. It's a team that structurally has got problems because they don't have any filter in front of the defence. And, you know, if you watch the game...
Demme made that role.
Yeah, so he did. He immediately got booked. And, you know, you were right in terms of the profile that you gave of him as being a terrier-like.
He can play the DM, can he?
Very good.
Like nominative determinism. Yeah.
But their home form, James, has been terrible. They've lost 5 of their first 10 games at the San Paolo so far this season. The last time they did that was in 97-98 when they went down, as you well remember. I don't think that's going to happen this time. I think there's too much talent. But they're certainly missing Koulibaly, even though he hasn't had the best season. He got that injury early on against Parma, has been out for 3 weeks now. Mertens as well has been injured. So things, and Insigne just looks a shadow of the player that he has been.
Has Carlo Ancelotti broken this team?
Put your agenda away, Rafa. Good to see Fiorentina at least getting a third straight win in that game at the San Paolo. Federico Chiesa on fire, scoring one, setting up... he set up Vlahovic, didn't he, for the second, I think.
He, without him, that goal doesn't get scored.
Okay.
It wasn't the
brilliant
assist,
goal.
But yeah, brilliant goal from Vlahovic, who scored the late equaliser against Inter. A really exciting teenager who lit up the kind of under-19s last year and has been fast-tracked into the team. But yeah, Chiesa... good finish for his first goal, and also kind of falls over under a challenge before this one, then switches the play out and Vlahovic gets it and does the Vlahovic special, which is. But they, we should say, good week for Fiorentina. They also knocked out Atalanta in the cup, which, given Atalanta were finalists and how well they've done in the Champions League, as I keep reminding everyone, very good result for them.
If only you'd had lunch riding on that result. Versus Fiorentina will be facing Inter again in the next round of the cup. That's next week, when Milan will be taking on Torino. This week, aside from Lazio, Napoli, you've also got Roma, Juve.
Yeah.
Oof. Just to clear up at the top, mention the fact that Juve are in the lead, and they've got their biggest lead of the season now. In fact, they are a whopping 4 points clear of Inter, who got held 1-1 at Lecce. Lecce had previously held Juventus as well.
Yeah,
but
same player, Mancoso, as well, scoring. He got the equaliser in this game. Unhappy return for Antonio Conte to Lecce. Was
four draws now in six for the Nerazzurri.
Yeah, there is this.
Get Eriksen in. Buy Victor Moses.
Sven-Goran Eriksson.
No.
Well, Young's already joined. They will make a push to conclude
a deal for Ricky Push.
No, please. It's good there.
to conclude a deal for Eriksson, see if they can get that done.
Right.
Conte was actually remarkably self-aware after this game, in appreciating that some of his rants after Inter have lost or dropped points earlier in the season created a sensation in the media. Pleading the fifth on this when asked whether he felt that they needed to do more in the transfer market. They, of course, did sign someone only to return him to sender this week, Leonardo Spinazzola.
Oh, yeah.
They're doing the swap deal with Politano. Poor Politano, who came through the ranks at Roma, is Roman, a Roma fan, thinks he's going to get his dream move to Roma, passes his medical, but Inter decided to pull the plug on Spinazzola. Spinazzola then played for Roma at the weekend and actually helped score, because it was from his cross that an own goal went in. Poor old Politano had to return to Inter.
If you were an Inter fan, would you be confident that the players that they've brought in now would make the difference as far as the title push is concerned? I mean, from the outside looking in, it looks a little bit curious that they're going for experience, shall we say, players, when Conte style is so intense and so based on.
So this was one of the comments that he made, which I wouldn't say. This is one of the comments he made after the draw yesterday, that unless we play at 200 miles an hour, we're an average team. Which I think, if you're a player for that team, I don't think that goes down particularly well. He feels that they don't have cover. That if they, if one or two players are out injured or suspended, then it's really felt. But he's gone with players who he either knows. So Victor Moses. Young has played as a wing back and has experience. He's a captain, was a captain at United. Giroud is someone who's had. I think Eriksen does make the team better, because I think since Sensi's injury, even though Sensi's back now, they've lacked goals from midfield. And I think Eriksen can provide that. And certainly in a game like the one we saw against Lecce, where Lecce changed system to play against Inter, put five at the back, basically everyone behind the ball. You need someone who can score from distance, challenge the goalkeeper from outside the box. I think Eriksen can do that. Conte has Inter eating out the palm of his hand, because they've never been this close. It certainly hasn't felt that they've been this close. Yes, they've maybe been in title races going into December. They've almost had the chance to be winter champions, as they did this year, to be in contention, but then they've quickly faded. I think there's a real belief among Inter fans and at San Siro that this team's legit, and they'll certainly give Conte everything that he needs, or he thinks he needs, to make this push. I mean, there's a realistic assessment that Juventus have a very bloated squad and a very, very talented squad. And again, that plays to Conte's narrative that this will be one hell of an achievement if we win the title this year.
That bloated squad, as mentioned, 4 points clear Juve after they defeated Parma 2-1 with a brace from Cristiano Ronaldo, who's now on 11 goals in his last seven games. He's on fire.
Yeah, I mean, he's the first player for Juventus to have scored 16 in his first 20 league games of a season since Sivori back in the 60s.
Wow.
Doesn't happen often. Allegri always comes out and says that the team with the best defence wins the league. And Juventus have always had the best defence for the last 8 years. They don't at the moment. And they've not had a capocannoniere in that time. Cristiano probably won't be again this year because Immobile is breaking history, which again, just to congratulate and compliment Immobile to be a top scorer at the time when Cristiano Ronaldo at this moment particularly is playing like the Real Madrid Ronaldo, the one that who is just a complete goal machine.
The second goal, by the way, is fabulous. The move, the interplay and Dybala's assist.
Yeah,
lovely.
He's quite something.
Yeah, all right. One quick mention for the other crisis club of Calcio, Milan, who've turned the corner.
Yeah, unbeaten since Zlatan joined.
Right.
3 wins and a draw.
It does seem like him being there has somehow kind of just given everyone a bit of a spark.
Yep. So that the quality of the training sessions, intensity has been lifted. Milan averaging 60,000 at San Siro since he came back. So they've had 60 in the 2 home games against Samp and this one. They had 30 in a Coppa Italia game against Spal, which is a big crowd. So 150,000 in the time that Zlatan's been there, so booming. Only 2 points off the Europa League places now. I know it's
only
not Champions
2.
League, but you know,
something. It's not nothing. Okay, after this we're going to hear about Alan Pardew's penis.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Why Alan Pardew and Chris Bowell are de gratis spokes? Can you translate that, Rafa?
Is it Ghostbusters?
It is Ghostbusters. Wonderful banner held up by the Den Haag supporters to herald the arrival on the Den Haag bench, the Eredivisie strugglers of the aforementioned Pardew and Powell dream team, taking over at the side that was lying penultimate in the Netherlands First Division over the winter, having their first game this weekend. You may have seen reports. It was a triumphant start. A 2-0 victory over bottom of the table Waalwijk, which moved Den Haag up to 3rd from bottom. Opening goal from Shaquille Penis. So, not sure what the sub-editors made of that one.
But they were cock-a-hoop.
Terrific stuff.
He's a stand-up guy. He's
very nice.
Could he finish?
He could. And that meant the Valvite didn't keep a clean sheet. As anyway.
And Pardew's coaching. Aaron Meyers came on after the hour and scored 20 minutes later. The second
there you go.
Goal.
So. Yeah, Pardew, his last job obviously didn't go very well when he had 1 win in 18 at West Brom. But looking at his career, do you remember that used to be the thing? He would come in and he would do very well to begin with and then it would all fall apart.
Yeah. Newcastle.
Palace. Yeah, and Newcastle
offered
as well.
Him 8 years, as far as I remember.
That's right.
So they had to have seen something impressive in his job. Yeah.
Anyway, dropping down below Den Haag is Lee Catamol in another struggling Eredivisie side, VVV Venlo. Good weekend for Den Haag and also for Ten Hag, who's of course the Ajax manager. They extended their lead at the top of the Eredivisie to 6 points over AZ Alkmaar by beating Sparta 2-1. PSV, who fired Van Bommel over Christmas, dropped to 4th. Now, Ajax have brought Ryan Babel back to Dutch football. Did you know that? He made quite an impression, didn't he, in the Champions League for
Galatasaray with his red hair.
And his running and things. Good. All right. That was a nice little dip into the Eredivisie. France. Jules, French Cup action after this. It's the last 32 of the Coupe de France. And Jules, you got some teen prodigy news for us.
Well, yeah, so first, no big upset in France in this round.
Not even Bordeaux getting beat?
I guess maybe by Pau in the third division. Pau, by the way, who will host PSG in the next round, which is interesting because their manager is Bruno Irles, the former Monaco player and also the former Monaco youth team manager, who had Kylian Mbappe with him at the academy and didn't play him. And was really tough on him, saying that he was too selfish, not playing for the team enough, and benched him. And there was big issues between Kylian Mbappe and his dad and Bruno Irles at the time, almost to the point that Mbappe almost left Monaco, and instead Monaco sacked Bruno Irles, the manager, and kept Kylian Mbappe, and the rest is history. But it'll be the first time, really, that they meet again since those very tense years a few years ago.
Right, okay. A little bit more on PSG to come, but right now tell us about the extraordinary 16-year-old Ryan Cherki.
16 and 5 months. And I don't want to brag, but remember a few weeks ago?
Yeah. No.
When Cherki... You do.
What happened?
Back in October, I think.
Yeah.
And he made his debut at 16 and 2 days. and we said that he was starting to make a name for himself. He played in the youth league before when he was 15 and did incredibly well and finally got his chance in the first team and played a bit in the Champions League, played a little bit in the various cups as well. But that was really the first game he started and against another Ligue 1 side because they played against Nantes away right. from home as well.
So this was his second senior start ever.
Yeah.
He scored twice, including an opening goal inside the first minute of the yes. game. And then he later set up two more goals and won a penalty.
He's 16. 16 and 5 months. And he's just an incredible talent, left-footed, born and bred at Lyon, went through the academy. And he's just, yeah, he's just...
I wish he was born and bred in Paris.
I wish so. He'd be even cooler if he was. But, you know, it's...
That Lyon it's one, academy, though, both of them.
Yeah, it's incredible, really. And he's got that left foot and he's... The skills is incredible, the pace on the ball, the vision. He's got really everything. And there's plenty of time, obviously, and he will need to work on a lot of things. He's not ready for starting every game and playing, you know, in the Champions League against Juventus, for example, and that kind of stuff. But at that age, showing what he's showing is so promising. Like, you know, we shouldn't compare, but Karim Benzema hadn't played in the first team at that age. Kylian Mbappe hadn't played in the first team at that age either. Mm-hmm. So...
What position is he?
So his favourite is on the left-hand side. He's a forward, was an attacking midfielder. But he played as a second striker or number 10 in the Cup against Nantes. And he was really, really outstanding. And Lyon are looking for some attacking options now because Depay and Jeffrey Danelay are injured. But his emergence is making them think, well, do we need anyone and who do we really need? Because he will be able to play... And if he's got so much talent that he would be able to help that team and Rudy Garcia. So he has already changing the landscape in what Lyon were trying to do this month in terms of recruitment because he's been so good so quickly.
All right. Other young players lighting it up in the French Cup this weekend included Lewisham's Josh Marger for Bordeaux.
The former Sunderland striker who's little by little under Paulo Sousa really improving in his finishing, in his movement and things. It's interesting, although his team lost, which is a, you know, which is a bad result.
And Steffi Mavididi.
Yeah, the former Arsenal.
Brest.
Yeah, who played for Arsenal and Juve. Yeah, who's there on loan. Again, he's an interesting player. He's young and he's so strong and he's quick and little by little, I think he's adapting to a different culture, a different country.
So he's on loan from Juve, former England under 20, and
he's not good enough to play for Juve. Let's be honest. You know, I've seen him play a lot this season, but I think for Ligue 1, he would certainly be good enough. And if he can keep working hard like that and improving, he would get to a decent level.
Okay. French Cup, of course, the previous round, the big story there was Saint-Pierroise. From Réunion.
Yes, the Réunion Islands.
Yeah, who'd travel, 11,000 miles, took on Niort and beat them in dramatic scenes that saw them become the first side from a French overseas territory to reach the last 32 of the Coupe de France in 31 years. This weekend they're in action again.
Against Épinal away again because they have to play away. So they went back to La Réunion and then came back again, did the 10,000-mile trip again to play Épinal. And this time they lost literally.
They had a man sent off after 15 minutes.
Yeah, and they went all the way to extra time. And in I think, the 118th minute, they conceded a goal. Yeah, you would have loved them to go to penalties and then maybe put another incredible upset. But it's a lovely story.
That's a tough journey home for their supporters.
Dimitri Payet played there. Florence Inamapongol played there as well. Yeah. They started their career there before moving to France.
Papin Djibril Cissé finished their careers there.
Yeah, for different reasons then.
Because
you know.
It's a really nice place to
live.
Yeah,
it's an amazing place, yeah.
Have you been to Réunion?
We went there before the, not that I brought us luck, but before the 2010 World Cup. Uh-huh. France had a friendly game there, so we travelled there with the national team.
Saint-Pierroise certainly caught the imagination of a lot of listeners. 94th minute writes in saying, with them being knocked out of the Coupe de France, what do the panel regard as the best achievement from an island club in their respective nations? Boy, Rafi, you're going to struggle with this one. What have you got, Alvaro?
Can I go? Mallorca.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, Mallorca.
Doing what?
Won the Spanish Cup, I believe, with Samuleto. Okay. And then they reached.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and then they reached the Cup Winner Cup against Lazio.
Who was their manager?
In the Cup Winner Cup, it was Hector Cooper.
No question what the greatest achievement by an island team in Italy was.
It's got to be Gigi Riva's Cagliari.
Damn.
Winning the
Where can
Scudetto.
I hear more about that, James?
There's a podcast called Golazzo.
There's a podcast for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. PSG, who you mentioned will be taking on Pau,
yep.
They scraped through against Lorient with Icardi blanking against the game in a row. Yeah, Cavani is asked to leave.
Yes, and for the first time...
So Fergus Lynch says, is Cavani going to leave? And where would he go? Spurs and United would be a good destination, says Fergus Lynch.
Yeah, for the first time they opened the door to it. They told him that he was not for sale, that he would not go before, because I think if Icardi gets injured, unfortunately, or something like that, Cavani is definitely the backup. If he goes, either they will have to recruit someone or put Kylian Mbappe more centrally, which he can do, I guess. But the idea was for him not to go. But he's been pushing so much for a move, and the first Atletico Madrid offer was 10 million euros, which PSG thought was not enough. Now that they've opened the door, I think it's a clear message to Atletico, listen, if you give us more money, we will let him go. So I would expect this one to go through. And PSG probably not replacing him and keeping that money.
Who's
keeping
promoting?
He's there, man. I mean, he's been burglar twice, but he's still otherwise
Leo should just take Piontek like he did last January.
Just leave us alone with your Piontek. No one wants him. You know? Trying to sell him to the whole world.
Take Piontek.
No one wants him. But he wants to go to Atletico. He doesn't want to go to England. He's 32. A move to England would make no sense for him at this stage of his career. And the money, I think Atletico would be very good as well. He would really play. Diego Simeone has told him he would play.
Okay.
There's another one as well about Boubacari Soumaré from Lille, the very, very promising midfielder who was linked to a lot of clubs in the UK. I saw on a certain television channel in England as well that he was very close to Chelsea and Manchester United. He wasn't, and he has actually said that he was not going to leave this month.
Okay,
anyway.
That name again, Jules?
Boubacari Soumaré.
There you go.
So Chelsea fans and United fans, you'll have to wait a little bit more for your club maybe to go and get him.
Bingo.
And finally, there's Nantes-Bordeaux next Sunday in Ligue 1. And obviously a year ago, Emiliano Sala tragically died passed away. And then there will be a tribute, because he played for both clubs as well, there'll be a tribute where the Nantes fans and the staff, people at the club and the players as well, who will wear a special shirt. And all the money getting from that, from the shirt sales, will go to the club that Emiliano played for in Argentina when he was a kid before moving to France and to Bordeaux. So it will be quite an emotional afternoon, I think, in Nantes a year after he passed away.
Okay. We're going to be looking at some of your Twitter questions and, hey, a bit of Turkish second division in a moment or two. First of all, though, Paddy Power.
Arrivederci, listeners. Lee Price is on the line from Paddy Power with the Euro odds. Lee, let's start with the Bundesliga. Erling Haaland scored 3, not a hat-trick, on his debut for Dortmund. How many goals will he have scored come the end of the season?
It was some debut, wasn't it? The thing is, I'm going to be disappointed now he ever doesn't score in a game, although that does seem unlikely, admittedly. And we make it odds on that he scores more than 14 league goals this season. Pardon the emphasis there, but that's quite incredible. Although it is 16-1, he finished the season as Dortmund's top scorer, so we're not getting that overexcited. It's also almost twice as likely, at 8-1, that he's playing in the English Premier League next season. Juicy.
All right, over to Spain and La Liga, where Atletico stumbled once more. Might they not make the top four this season?
Yeah, they are stumbling, but we don't think they're going to fall entirely. They will regather their balance, we expect. It's 7-2. They finish outside the top four, so quite a short price. But it's massively odds on they do make the top four at 1-7. Sevilla are level on points of Atletico and are 1-3 to finish in the top four. Getafe in fifth are 6-1 to qualify for the Champions League, but it does make them rank outsiders.
And finally to Serie A, where Lazio are in sensational form, but it's the Rome derby on Sunday. Is that where it all comes to a crashing halt?
Right, I don't know if there's been a glitch in my system or not, but I'm just going to read these odds out and see if your reaction is the same as mine when you hear them. Roma are 6-4 to win this game. The draw's 5-2. And Lazio are 6-4. We've sat on the fence in the past, but this is the ultimate not being able to call it, despite Lazio's 11 wins in a row. Are there some clues in the recent history between the two teams? When they played in September, the score was 1-1, and it's 6-1 that happens again. Or the same fixture last season ended up 3-1 to the home team, Roma. It's 14-1 that happens again.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. Terms and conditions apply. And when the fun stops, stop. Before we stop, listener, got loads of your fruity questions to pick through. And Jules, also a bit of that Turkish second division news.
Yeah, incredible game in the second division between Uşakspor and Egin Velimeşe. So in the second division. happened on Sunday. No, listen to this, listen to this. There's a penalty at the end of the game for the visitors.
Oh, yeah? Which one was that?
Agene Vali Messe. Something like that.
Sorry. Where are they from?
From the south of the country.
Okay.
And, you know, made that a short trip to Hushakspor. And it's a penalty. The keeper, Ersin Aydin, saves it, but right. comes off his line. So the referee says, you're not allowed to do that. It's a yellow card for you, and you Ooh. Take the penalty again.
Right.
Second penalty, the keeper saves it again, but comes off his line again. So it's a second
no
yellow.
Way. So he sends him off.
Sends him off. And there's a third penalty Gosh. Being taken for
So who goes in goal now?
The defender. And guess what? The defender saved the penalty as well. So
Does he get sent off?
No, he didn't even get yellow. But they were celebrating at the end of the game.
That's extraordinary.
So three pens.
Right.
A keeper sent off for coming off his line twice.
Right.
Despite saving the pen.
Who was it? Was it the same player taking the spot kick each time?
I would
time?
Think so. I haven't done that much research on it, but yeah.
It was. I'm getting confirmation from producer Charlie.
It was the same player.
Fatih Dilak was the player.
Yeah. And he will never take a pen ever
Fatih
again.
Fatih Pillock. More like. Yeah. I'm sorry, that was uncalled for. What were the...
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
So they were 2-0 down anyway, so yeah. even the goal wouldn't have changed anything.
Oh, right. You left that detail out.
Well, yeah, because it was funny anyway.
Okay.
Yeah.
What were the teams again? Can I just make it clear that we're chuckling about our own inability to pronounce
yes,
perfectly
course,
good names properly?
No offense.
Not any kind of cultural. Good. Let's get on to some questions from listeners. Questions like Galois in France, who says, what has been the real impact of Aaron Ramsey at Juventus? James, what has it been?
Well, he was injured when he arrived. Let's not forget that, because of it was a bad injury that he picked up in that Arsenal-Napoli game in the Europa League. That meant he missed a lot of pre-season. He did kind of score on his debut. I think the goal was given to him. And tended to start more in the Champions League than in the league. I think Sarri was experimenting with a few different systems to start with. It does seem that Juventus have settled on this 4-4-2 diamond with Ramsey playing at the tip. Certainly since the end of the winter break, he's been starting regularly for them. But there is a feeling, as generally I think still with this Sarri Juventus, that aside from the guys up top, Ronaldo, Dybala and Higuain, there's maybe more to come from certainly the other elements in that midfield, because Matuidi's very good, but Matuidi's very good because he essentially allows Ronaldo to do whatever he wants, because he does all the work that Ronaldo should do without the ball, particularly when they're defending. So I think there's still more to come from Ramsey. He has had some injuries before the Derby d'Italia. He picked up one. I think the only time he's actually played 90 minutes this season has been a full 90 has been for Wales. So I'm expecting big things second half of the season. They certainly need goals from midfield, and we all know from his time at Arsenal that he can supply them.
Certainly can. Billy Innes says, what next for Union Nagelsmann when Leipzig win the Bundesliga? What's the plan, Raf?
Well, first they want to win it, then I think they want to target the Champions League. I mean, it might sound a little bit ambitious for a team that's only been in existence for 10 years, but I think that is actually the bigger plan, certainly is, as far as he's concerned. He wants to establish Leipzig as a real power in European football. It's going to be difficult, but they're giving it a good go this season. I think they have a good chance of getting into the last eight, as we talked about earlier. And I don't think, having talked to his agent, who's also looking after David Wagner and Jurgen Klopp, that Nagelsmann sees this as a short-term project and a stepping stone to immediately move on. He's not that kind of guy. So whatever happens this year, whether they win or not, he's definitely sticking around for at least another year or so.
Okay. Robbie, meantime, tables this question. With the discussion about how all Watford needed was a good English manager, do other countries have this focus on only having managers from that nation? Jules, is there a big premium on being French in French management?
There is a bit of that, yeah. There is a bit, and there's a few of them that come back in a crisis situation, like Antoine Comboire. Not that it turned out well this season with Toulouse, because he was dreadful. But yeah, there's a bit of that as well.
Okay.
Because they know the league and the language, and all of that is supposedly easier, I guess.
In Spain, we have that as well. And there are some managers who always return to the same club.
But because they're Spanish?
Because they are Spanish, because they know the house. And they...
they speak the language and they know the players and probably the board as well. Okay. Joaquín Caparrós, the Sevilla man, I mean, right. He came back so many times. And in Deportivo de La Coruña now, they've got a manager who managed them in the late 90s and in the early 2000s, and he's back now, Fernando Vázquez. So there are some names that repeat themselves over the decades as well, as soon as a club has an abysmal crisis.
Like Fatty Tarim at Galatasaray.
I guess, yeah.
Yeah.
You've got a few in Italy, to be fair.
Well, yeah,
right?
I was going to say, though, in Italy, my impression is that there isn't, that they're quite like a foreign manager, don't they? You don't get who go, yeah, we need an Italian for an Italian football team.
They like it until they are Italianized, which is inevitable at some stage. They adapt to their new surroundings, but there's only one foreign manager in the league at the moment. That's Paulo Fonseca.
Oh, yeah.
He's certainly done very well. I think there's always, this been certainly with certain clubs like Milan, you know, aside from...
Which foreign manager do you think has got most Italianized in Italy?
Oh, actually, there is. That's the thing, because I've considered him Italian.
Right.
Sinisa's definitely.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I would say.
That's a great
show. If
shout.
I may say.
He's very Italian.
But Simeone...
Sven as well.
Simeone learned so much in Italy. I mean...
Too much. Do you know one manager, one foreign manager who never got Italian? Zdenek Zem.
Well, that's true. But I consider him to be Italian as well.
Well, he is.
He never played an Italian style of football, though, no? So that's why...
Well...
He was very, very attacking, you know, attacking-minded, no?
It's a style of football played by Italian clubs... Managed by Zdenek Zeman. So,
I think there's always tended to be a cultural resistance in Italy to the foreign manager.
What do you think?
Yeah, in that you have to prove yourself because we have Coverciano.
Right.
We have our specific kind of didactic way of teaching coaches. Mourinho, when he got the Inter job, it's like, okay, well, show us why you've got this reputation.
Right.
And I wouldn't say there's people throw spanner in the works, but I think to overcome that is actually... pretty difficult, and again, just it burnishes the achievements that they get once, you know, if they are successful.
Fair enough. Italy has its Coverciano. Bundesliga has its Borussia Dortmund reserves.
Yeah, indeed. But I mean, the premium isn't so much on Germans, but on German speakers.
Okay.
Historically, there's been quite a few successful foreign managers in the Bundesliga, but they tend to come from countries where they either speak German or find it easy to pick up the language, you know, whether they're Hungarians or Czech or Dutch. It's from those areas that the Bundesliga likes to recruit the managers. And the limiting factor is very much the language, is one of the reasons why we haven't really seen any Latin managers succeed, apart from Giovanni Trapattoni in stages. Pep being the big exception that he is in so many levels, of course, was an exception in that one, but not non-experiment, if you will, that has been replicated across the league. I think the one, you know, big name manager that really did not work out, for example, was Nevio Scala, who was a complete disaster at Borussia Dortmund. So, yeah, the language is the problem here.
But I think that in every league, there is this pattern of a foreign man who gets to a club and he gets to understand the idiosyncrasy of the club better than
Steve
the
McLaren.
Locals themselves. I don't know if Steve McLaren, but Zanetti at Inter, he's not a manager, but Zanetti. Right.
Yeah.
Paolo Futre at Atletico de Madrid or Marcelo Bielsa at Athletic de Bilbao, sometimes they understand better the tradition of the club than the locals themselves. And I think that there are examples like this in every league. Again, in the UK, probably we can find one as well.
In Rome, I mean, it's always seen as an advantage to be an outsider, you know, until you're no longer an outsider.
Nemo profita in patria.
Yeah.
Or however you pronounce that.
You're not conditioned or influenced by the environment.
The cauldron.
Johan Cruyff is a perfect example of that.
He understood
Barcelona better than anyone else before.
Brilliant. Well, thanks for all those questions. Some fascinating themes there. And we'll be back with another edition of the European Totally Football Show next week. Of course, as we mentioned, Galazzo returns on Wednesday with the Francesco Totti special part one. And then there's another Totally Football Show on Thursday. And hope you'll be joining us for that. For now, Alvaro, Rafa, James and Julian, many, many thanks. We'll catch up with you soon.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter, and make sure you check out our brand new website too, thetotallyfootballshow.com.
Muddy Knees Media.